Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Suvos is Daf Samach Gimel. We're on Samach Beis Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, and we begin today with Rabbi Akiva. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Daf Islamos Yechon Nishmat Liba Gavriel Vashmuel. We got onto the topic of Rabbi Akiva, as we have been discussing now over the course of yesterday's Daf, the ability for a husband to go away and to go learn. There is without permission, there's with permission. And then, of course, there's sustaining a marriage. But between all that, there's the idea, the basic idea is that if a husband wants to go away to learn, so he may do so. The Mishnah tells us for 30 days without permission. And with permission, so then the Gemara first commented yesterday that if he has permission, then he goes as long as however he wants to go. But what's Derech Eretz? What's the general consensus? What's considered, quote-unquote, normal? So the Gemara brought in a machlos between Rav and Rav Yochanan, a month away, a month home. Rav Yochanan says a month away, 2 months home. But the basic idea is that he goes away for some time, but not a long time. And then, of course, there's special Tanaim. Special Tanaim and Amaraim that the Gemara we described yesterday, who went away for a significant amount of time. All of course with agreement, but going for a much longer period of time than what we discussed yesterday. The Tosus points out already in yesterday's daf. I didn't say this Tosus over, but these special men who went away also have special women as well, special wives. And if you take a look at Tosus back in Tzamach Beis Amin Aleph, so he writes, V'yishlam da'asam b'lo pitoi hayasmechosh ayu ba'alem hochen lomo Torah. Right, Tosus says that in general, these particular women who were married to these men, and we're going to speak about Rabbi Akiva in just a moment, so they were more than excited and more than happy that their husbands go away to learn Torah, and to become Tamid Chacham. And Tosus goes on to say, nasu. Meaning that's exactly why they married these guys. They married these guys so that these guys become Tamid Chachamim. So yes, it's going to be with great sacrifices. We'll see in just a moment. I'm sure everyone knows already how many years Rabbi Akiva went to go learn Torah without returning home. Well, we already saw yesterday, without Rabbi Akiva, 6 years, 12 years. So the idea that Rabbi Akiva goes away for 24 years, so Tosu says, that's fine. I mean, these wives, they signed up for this. So, good. So that's Tosu's all the way back on Samach Beis Amud Aleph regarding the wives of these women. And without further ado, we start with the Gemara. We are on the bottom of Samach Beis Amud Beis. And Rabbi Akiva, Raya de Ben Kaba Savua Hava. So we start off with Rabbi Akiva, and we get stories of Rabbi Akiva throughout the Gemara. Probably one of the most popular and important Tanaim that we speak about. Rabbi Akiva was the one responsible for the resurrection of the Torah. Right, the 24,000 Talmidim, as we begin Sfiras HaOmer, I guess it's very timely to just bring it up. So we had 24,000 Talmidim, the Gemara Yevamos, we saw this Gemara together. And the 24,000 Talmidim died, and they died during the period of Pesach and Atzeres. The Gemara doesn't say exactly when, so that's why there are various menhagim in terms of when you observe some form of a velus. But then after that, so after those 24,000 students dies, so he has five students, and he goes ahead and he reteaches Torah to the five students, and those are the five students who are basically the ones who are carrying on the Mesorah, right? Rav Yehuda Anasi is the author of the Mishnayos, so he was a student of Rav Meir, and Rav Meir was in turn a student of Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva really the one we could point at to take responsibility for the transmission of Torah Shabbat Peh. Anyway, we're here now in the Gemara in Ksuvos and Daf, Samach Beis Amud Beis. If I remember correctly, the Gemara Yevamos is also on Daf Samach Beis, but I may be wrong about that. Either way, the Rabbi Akiva, we are talking about him getting married. So he was the shepherd of Kabbas Avua, Hava, Chazise Barti Davitznia Uma'ale. So the daughter of Kabbas Avua took a liking to Rabbi Akiva. Kabbas Avua was one of the wealthier individuals. We saw him in Gittin. I guess we'll see him in Gittin in the Daf Yomi. He was a parnas. He was a sponsor. He was a benefactor to the Jewish people at large. So anyway, so his daughter took a liking to Rabbi Akiva. He was tzaniya umaale. He was very modest, and he had fine qualities about him. Tosus himself has a little bit of a difficulty trying to navigate through the description of Rabbi Akiva. This is in his pre-learning state. So you take a look at Tosus, the bottom Tosus on the Samud, V'had Amar Beilo over him. So Tosus quotes the Gemara, P'sachim Amar Rabbi Akiva, K'shaiti Amar Aretz, Hayiti Omer. So Rabbi Akiva gives a self-description of what it was like when he was an Amar Aretz. And he would say, as an Amar Aretz, so if you give me Talmud Chacham, so I'll bind him like a donkey. Right? So one of the descriptions of himself. So think about it. Meaning Tosus is bothered by the fact that over here Rabbi Akiva is being described as someone who is Sanu Male. Again, pre-learning. Modest and a fine quality. And meanwhile, the way Rabbi Akiva reports himself before he was involved in learning is I would bite a Talmud Chacham. Doesn't sound that modest, doesn't sound like such a fine quality. So Tosa suggests Mashma de Lohave Male. So Ikala Meimar, so Tosa makes a suggestion to Asam Lav Mishum Shayasone Talmud Chachamim. So it wasn't that Rabbi Akiva had a hatred for Talmud Chachamim per se. Ela Mishum Shayasav Rishim Midgai Mal Ame Aretz Mimnei Torasan. What bothered Rabbi Akiva was the arrogance. He felt that the Talmud Chachamim at the time had an overabundance of arrogance. And so it wasn't the Talmid Chachamim per se that he was that he was loathsome of, but rather was the arrogance of the Talmid Chachamim. So Vigam Yishum Shalah Yomanichim Osam Liga Bahem Kedamrinan Big Dam Aretz Mejos LePerushim. Halachin mentioned in the Gemara in Chagiga, where an Amar Aretz can't come into contact with a Talmud Chacham, but basically he thought that it was coming from a position of arrogance, and that's what he was opposed to. So in other words, he was anti-arrogance. Okay, good. Anti-arrogance, that's a good thing. So that Tosa suggests is what is behind the maybe how to be miyashiv, how to conflate the Argamar over here and the Gemara mentioned in Pesachim. Anyway, back to our Gemara. So she goes to Rabbi Akiva and she says the following to him. Look, I'd like you and I to be married. Would you do me a small favor? However, would you go to yeshiva if we got married? So Rabbi Akiva was interested. Yes, interested in both. Interested in marrying her and interested also in going to yeshiva. So the marriage took place. Bitzina took place in a private setting, and he was sent away. He went to yeshiva. Now they got married in private, and as we'll see, it become apparent and evident in the story coming up. It's because her father was not interested. Shamavu afke mi beisei. So the father heard, and the father kicked her out of the house. Not only that, but the father also made an eder. Father said that he can't get any benefit from his nechasim. Okay, so just as a point of interest, there is a discussion about marrying somebody, a discussion in halach about marrying somebody that your parents are not in favor of. It sounds pretty clear from the Gemara, although, you know, it's from these anecdotes, it's hard to come to conclusions, but it's pretty clear from the Gemara that you can. You can marry somebody even though your parents are opposed to it. Now again, not suggesting, not recommending, but it's pretty clear from the Gemara that that's an option. Also, Yosef Trace Rei Shnin Bebei Rav. So Rabbi Akiva now spends his first 12 years in yeshiva. Also, Isi Ba'ade Trace Rei Alfei Tamide. So now he's coming back home, and he's coming back home with 12,000 students. Okay, 1,000 students per year. I don't know if that's right math, but meaning the numbers work out. I don't know if it's 1,000 per year, but he's coming home with 12,000 students. Shamela Usab de Kamale Ad Kama Kamedaberis Almana Chayim. So, as Rabbi Akiva is about to open the door and see his wife after having gone away for 12 years, so he overhears a conversation, and the conversation goes, you know, you're a widow, and the worst part is that your husband's still alive. So, and how long is this going to continue? Amarle, we're now on the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. So she replies back to him, Yili Diitzai is, well, listen, she says, I'm going to go in the other direction. Meaning, you think I'm a widow, I'm more than happy. It's kind of like what we saw in Tosis in the beginning of the daf today. I'm more than happy with what my husband's doing. And furthermore, if he'd listen to me, he would go, Trace Reishni Achrina. He would go for another 12 years. So Amar, so Rabbi Akiva realized, and again, Rabbi Akiva didn't walk in the door yet. She didn't know that Rabbi Akiva was overhearing the conversation. Amar Barushus Kavidna. So he says, I'm doing all this with the permission by my wife. So how do also he also trace Reishni? So he goes and he learns another 12 years. Zachrini, Bebe Rav. So for another 12 years, he's going to learn yeshiva. Ki asa, and it's not without comment that the Sichas Musar of Shmuel Levitz points this out, that he doesn't even walk in, he doesn't even say hello, and by design, meaning he didn't want any interruption in his learning. He wanted the learning to be behemshech, continuous, without interruption. So the so it's not 12 plus 12 does not equal 24. It's he wanted to go for 24 consecutive years. So and he heard that his wife was in approval of it. Fine. So he goes for another 12 years, and now he's coming back, and now he's coming back with 24,000 students. Okay, again, the math works out. Another 12 years, another 12,000 students. So Shama Devasayu Avakanaf Kelapeg. So his wife heard, his wife hears that he's coming, and she goes out to greet him. Amrula Shivavasa Sheili Mane Levush Veichse. So the neighbors say, look, it's 24 years since you've seen your husband. You may want to put in something nice in order to go see him. This is the first time you're going to see him. 24 years, take a look at yourself. You're not in a position to see him right now, so borrow some clothing to go see him. So Amar Lahu Yo Dad Sadik Nefesh Bamto. So she says, quoting the Pasuk in Mishlei, he knows me. Meaning there's... I don't need to dress up. I don't need to put anything on. He understands me. He knows me. Obviously, they had a very unique and special relationship. The Kimachel Agabe, so when she gets to him, Nafla Al Apa, she falls down on her face. Kamenashka Leila Kare, she starts kissing his feet. Now, his attendants didn't realize what was going on, and they see this quote unquote crazy woman getting down in front of Rabbi Kiva and kissing his feet, not knowing that it's his wife, so they start pushing her away. So Rabbi Kiva says to his students, let her be. Shaliva Shalachem Shalah. And probably one of the more famous lines that occurs in the Gemara. So Rabbi Kiva's response is that what belongs to me, what belongs to you, meaning all the Torah that I am asked, all the Torah that I taught, everything that we can take credit for, Shalah, really belongs to her. She's the one responsible for this. She's really the catalyst. She's the motivator. And Rabbi Kiva properly gives her the correct credit. So Shamavu Dalsa Gavaraba. So now Kalba Savua, right? Because the story starts with Kalba Savua, so it all comes around full circle to Kalba Savua. So the story returns back to Kalba Savua, and he hears that Gavaraba Lamasa, that a great rabbi is coming into the community. Amra Ezel Agabe. So he says, I'll go to him. Efshar de Mefer Nidrai, maybe he'll be made for my neder. Not perfectly clear from the story that he understood that it was his son-in-law, or he just thought it was a great rav. But either way, it sounds more like he knew. I mean, she knew, and okay. So also Gabe Amarle Adaita de Gavarab, I mean the Nadart. So Rabbi Kiva asked him the following question. Now remember, Kalva Sivu made a neder so that Rabbi Kiva nor his daughter would be able to get benefit from any of his estate. So Rabbi Kiva now is basically going to open up a Pesach, open up a door. Right, as we go, when we leave Ksuvos, it'll be another short 60 days from now, and we enter into the world of Nedarim, so we're going to see it. There's the big issue is finding a Pesach, finding an opening, so that Neder could be released from the Neder. So he turns to Rabbi Kiva and he says, and Rabbi Kiva says to him, look, did you know that your son-in-law was going to become this great Talmud Chacham? So, and if you did, would you have made the Neder? Amalei afilo perek echad afilo halacha achas. So Kalva Savua says, look, even if he knew one perek, even if he knew one halacha, I never would have made the Neder. What I was so opposed to was the idea that my daughter was Mekadosh Aman, who knew absolutely zero. That's what bothered me. So Amalei anohu. So Rabbi Kiva says, yeah, I'm him. Meaning, I'm your son-in-law. Again, now it sounds more like the story, like he didn't know. Okay, either way. So, but Rabbi Kiva identifies himself as being the man, as being his son-in-law. Now, so the father now gets on the floor, and the father starts kissing the feet of Rabbi Kiva. And right away, he writes a check. He gives over, at that point in time, half of his estate over to his son-in-law. Okay. That's the Gemara describing Rabbi Kiva and his 24 years in yeshiva.
Any significance to this Gemara following the Gemara telling us how much time she spent with your wife?
No, I apologize. I mentioned the very beginning of the daf today. Yeah, what you need to look at is you need to look at Tosfos on Samach Beis Amaral. The first Tosfos in Samach Beis Amaral. So he says that in general, this is not the general practice. But Tosfos says these are special people, meaning both on the men and women's side. where basically she signed up for this, meaning she was, right, as we saw in the beginning of the story, meaning she told him, look, I want you to go for 12 years. I want you to go for another 12 years. When she signs up for it, then yes. But generally speaking, no. Right. Barti de Rabbi Kiva Abdalei leben Azai. And then the daughter of Rabbi Kiva did the same thing for Ben Azai. When I saw this Gemara, meaning I've seen the Gemara before, but that doesn't mean anything. It means I just saw the Gemara before. But then I was thinking to myself, wait a second, I thought Ben Azai never got married. What's going on over here? But the daughter of Rabbi Kiva did the same thing for Ben Azai. And there's an aphorism, an expression that people say, and that is the you follows the you. Right? The in other words, like mother, like daughter. And it's it's of no coincidence that the Gemara uses a mashal of Rachela, Bas Rachela. Her name was Rachel, although the Gemara over here doesn't identify that. But her name was Rachel. And how do I know that? I guess just because I've heard enough times, so I know it. But I don't have a source that says so, but I'm pretty sure. Anyway, Rachela, Bas Rachela. Azla ke uvde ima kach abda barta. Just like the mother does, so like the daughter does. So the daughter did the same thing for Ben Azai. So, of course, it was strange. I thought Ben Azai never got married. So take a look at Tosfos. I'm happy to report. Tos is also bothered by this. Barti de Rabbi Kiva Avdalei leben Azai hachit. The second Tos is on the Amun. V'im tamar v'abba per kama de sota parich v'ha'ika ben Azai de lo nasiv. The Gemara in Sota says that Ben Azai never got married. So what's our Gemara talking about? Our Gemara now puts Ben Azai as the son-in-law of Rabbi Akiva. By the way, the Gemara Yushami, I'm not going to quote a lot of Yerushalmis. I'm just for assurance purposes. But the only Yerushalmi I'm going to quote is the Gemara Yishkalim, because that's the Yerushalmi we did together in the Daf Yomi. So the Gemara Yishkalim says that Ben Azai and Rabbi Akiva had a student Rebbe relationship, which turned into a colleague relationship. Right? The Gemara Yishkalim says that Ben Azai was a Tamil Chaver to Rabbi Akiva. So they had a very special relationship. But over here, Agamar says that it's that they also had a father-in-law, son-in-law relationship, but that does not coordinate with the Gemara Sota. Gemara Sota says that Ben Azai never got married. Now, Tosus points out that there is one formulation of the Gemara where the Gemara says that yes, he got married, but he never was with his wife. Now, that doesn't make it great, but it makes it better. At least now the two Gemaras work out with each other. Tosis makes another suggestion, which is that maybe what the Gemara over here means is that he only went through Erison with the daughter of Rabbi Akiva, but they never went to the second stage of marriage of Nisuin. Another possibility. Simple Pshat in the Gemara is that Ben Azai never get married. In fact, the Rambam, I quoted the Rambam yesterday, I'll quote him again today, the Rambam describing Ben Azai said, nah, he never got married. So the simplest Pshat is that Ben Azai never got married, although you have to keep our Gemara in mind. Our Gemara says that's not true. Okay. Back to our Gemara. Okay, Adkan Divrei Rabbi Akiva, probably one of the more popular stories that is found in the Gemara. We got to see it inside. Rav Yosef Bered Rav Shadra Avua Lebe Rav Lekamed Rav Yosef. The Rav Yosef, son of Rava, sent to his father to yeshiva. I'm sorry, Father sent him to yeshiva for a commander of Yosef, in front of Rav Yosef, meaning he'd be learning in front of Rav Yosef, Paskalei Shishani. And the agreement was, meaning again, this was now, as they were making the Shiduchim, so they were now basically contractually agreeing to how many years he's going to learn yeshiva. So for 6 years, Kavat Lashni, Mata, Mala Yumadi Kippure. So 3 years now he's coming back home. So in the context of all the stories that we saw, so I'm just saying this in the context of all the stories we saw, failure. I mean, 3 years is a long time to learn yeshiva and to be married and to not go home. But we saw all these great Tanaim and Amarim who did, in fact, learn for durations of 6 years, 12 years. So anyway, so he was going to learn for 6 years, but 3 years already he's coming home, and he's coming home to Erev Yom Kippur. Again, there's got to be something to coming home in Erev Yom Kippur. I don't know what it is. Everyone's coming home in Erev Yom Kippur. And, okay, that's Amar Ezov Achzen Le'in Shebesi. So he says, look, I want to go home. I want to go see my family. Shama Avur Shakamana Benafak La'apeh. So the father overhears this, and he says, no, that's ridiculous. Meaning, we said you're going to learn yeshiva for 6 years, and what are you doing coming home after 3 years? So Amar Le'ez Onascha Niskarta. Now, the language over here is very strong, right? Caution, warning. It's a very strong language, but he says, all of a sudden you remember your wife. Now, that's not a literal translation, admittedly, but basically, like, what are you doing? What are you doing coming home? You shouldn't be coming home. You are supposed to be learning yeshiva. So, Igad Arme Amale Yonaschan is carrot. Now, according to the other language the Gemara formulates, it's a little bit better. Yonaschan is carrot. You remembered your Yona Yadav, meaning, again, but the same basic idea. Like, what are you doing? You're coming home to your wife? That wasn't what we agreed to. So, Ichud La Mar Ifsik Vala Mar Ifsik. And they got into a fight, and the Gemara just ends off by saying nobody was eating Suda Mafsekas, meaning we know that in Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur, so you got to have a meal, it's a mitzvah to eat a meal in Erev Yom Kippur, and these two were involved in such a fight that neither of them ate on Erev Yom Kippur. What happens after that point in time? So I can't tell you. The Gemara doesn't give me any more information. But it didn't end off pleasantly. That's certainly the point of the Gemara. All right, we are up to the Mishnah on Samach Yom Amud Aleph, and now we speak about a rebellion. The wife can rebel against the husband, and of course it can work the other way. Relationship requires two people. Husband can rebel against the wife, and what the Mishnah is going to be discussing is, so what's the format? Meaning, how is Beis Din going to be involved in a rebellion? Now, of course, in many of these issues, it's going to be a lot of he said, she said, but as we'll see, the Gemara is going to make it very clear she's rebelling. Now, again, it could work the other way around. It could work as where he's rebelling as well, but we're going to be focusing on her rebellion, and you'll see. It will be clear. It's not going to be just a he said, she said, but it'll be clear in the context of the Gemara that she is rebelling. Now, I'm going to use the word rebelling a lot, and I'm not going to give much of a definition in the time being. As we go through the Mishnah, when we start with the Gemara, I'll give a much clearer definition of what rebellion actually means. Hamaretz Abala, the Mishnah says that she's rebelling against her husband. So, Pochasan L'Miksuv Asa. So, the Mishnah's formulation in terms of how to deal with it is a reduction from Miksuvah. A reduction from a ksuva, you take away money. Now, you're not really taking away money. Meaning, let's make sure that we understand. Ksuva just simply means that the husband's going to promise the wife a certain sum of money upon death or divorce. The base amount is 200 zuz, and then there's whatever tosefes there is. When we talk about reduction, we just simply mean that whatever that figure is, so then you start knocking off an amount off that figure. How much do you knock off? So Shiva dinarim b'Shabbos, so 7 dinarim per week, according to the Tanna Kamma, is the amount that you get deducted. So how do you arrive at that number? So if you take a look at Tosus over here, Tosus says, third Tosus on the Amud, Pochasen la zayin dinarim, b'yushamim farsh kenegi sheva malachash ha'isha osa labala. So Tosus says, look, the number coordinates with another number that we saw. We go back to Daf and Tesamud Beis, and the Gemara over there says that they're Eilu Malacha, Sheisha Osa Labala. So these are the things that a woman does for her husband. And the Mishnah lists 7 activities that a woman is obligated to do for her husband. So the number 7 over here corresponds to the 7 Malachas. Although, it's nice, it's a nice match, but we're going to see together that her merida, her rebellion is not going on all 7 of these activities. It could be that it's only a rebellion on one of the activities. And maybe not the one even mentioned in the Mishnah back on Nun Testament Beis. So, but just in other words, but there is some connection with the number 7. So Shiva Dinarim B'Shabbos, 7 Dinarim a week. So in other words, as long as she maintains in her rebellion, she's steadfast, she's stubborn in her rebellion, so 7 dinar a week are deducted from Miksuva. Rav Yehuda Amar Sheva Tarpi'ikin. So Rav Yehuda has a different amount. It is 7, but not 7 dinar, 7 Tarpi'ikin. In terms of the actual currency, what that amounts to, so stay tuned, come back tomorrow, and we'll talk about actual dollars and cents. What's the difference between the Tanna Kamma and Rav Yehuda? That's coming up in tomorrow's daf. And the reduction goes until what point in time? until you've totally exhausted her ksuva. So in other words, her ksuva is again, whatever the number is, again, the base amount is going to be 200 zuz, so just keep deducting until there's no longer a ksuva. And if there's a tosefa, so then she obviously starts at a higher point, but then the deduction keeps going. You remember we talked about this also about a week ago. The idea that when there's a tosefes ksuva, when the husband at the marriage agrees to give her more than the 200 base amount, so that tosefes is part of the ksuva, right? Remember we made a big deal about that about a week ago, right? 14 different halachic nafkaminas, one of them being this one right here, meaning that if she's in a rebellion, so her ksuva gets deducted, and even from the tosefes is going to get deducted as well. Rav Yossi amar la olam u'bochet v'olech. The Rav Yossi says, no, keep going even past her ksuva. Keep going past her ksuva. Like, what more can you do? Meaning, her ksuva right now is what she owns. So, what does that mean? You keep going. So the Gemara goes on. The Mishnah goes on to explain. So poches v'olech hashim tipol la Yerusha mimakamach gove emenu. So that means now that she's in the red. So you keep deducting, and even if it's beyond her ksuva, you keep deducting, and she's in the red, and that means that let's say she falls, she has a windfall. Let's say she has a Yerusha. So that's going to be collected against now her, against her deduction. V'chein. The Mishnah says this is not only true regarding a woman, this is true for a man as well. Hamor d'alishto. Let's say a man rebels against his wife. Mosifan ha'ksuva sa. So you add to the ksuva. So in other words, obviously now we're going to go in the other direction. The husband is rebelling. Again, without giving any definition of what the word rebellion means. That's coming up in just a moment. But the husband's rebelling against the wife. So here, you're going to add to the ksuva. Now how much he has? Shlosha dinarim b'shabbos. So that's 3 dinarim b'shabbos. Now that's not fair. So that's correct. It's not equal with one another. The Gemara in tomorrow's daf is going to explain the inequality between her penalty and his penalty. He gets deducted 7 dinarim. She gets deducted 7 dinarim. He adds on 3 dinarim. Tomorrow we're going to be discussing why the inequality. Rav Yehuda Amar Shlosha Tarpikin, and Rav Yehuda says no, it's not 3 dinarim, it's 3 tarpikin. So same point by Rav Yehuda, just for the man and not for the woman. Okay, so we have. This is the Mishnah of Merida, of rebellion. And so, right now, the only larger comment I'm going to make, which will become apparent as we get through the rest of the daf today, is that the process of Merida, meaning the reaction of Merida, is a slow reaction. If you're not understanding what I mean. Meaning that a woman's rebelling. And again, you'll see in the Gemara, it's clear. It's not speculation. She is rebelling. She's in an open rebellion against her husband. The Mishnah's approach is a slow approach. Slow meaning that it's not grounds for me to divorce, and we don't take away ksuva right away. But in other words, we chip away at the ksuva. Chipping away at the ksuva with the hope and aspiration that she'll change her position. So it's a measured approach, it's a slow approach. And the same thing regarding the husband. Meaning when the husband's involved in a merida as well. So he's rebelling against his wife. So again, the Mishnah's general approach is a slower approach. It's not a quick punishment. It's a little bit of chipping away with the hope that he also will change his tune.
How is this tracked and documented?
Yeah, you did read my mind. I'm not really sure. I mean, I was.
Did he like write in the ketubah? Like it's been 6 weeks, and this has been.
Right. So there is documents that are written. We'll see more about that over the course of today and tomorrow. Just a little line of Gemara that discusses it, but the Gemara does not give detail in terms of how exactly what the process is in terms of making this clear. Okay, so Ben, you read my mind. I don't know the answer, but there does seem to be some sort of additional document that's written. Moret is mimai. So the obvious question is, good, we have a general idea, but what specifically are we talking about? What constitutes merida? What constitutes a rebellion? Rav Huna amami tashmish amita. Rav Huna says tashmish amita. So in other words, she's declaring no more intimacy between her and her husband. And Rav Yossi Rabbi Chanina amar mimalachas. Mimalachas. She is rebelling against the malachas that she's required to do for her husband. So Tanan, v'chena morid alishta. Now, here, so machlokas amarim, exactly what the definition of merida is, the Gemara turns back to our Mishnah. Look, what did our Mishnah teach us? Hamorid alishto. that there could be a merida in the direction of the wife to the husband. There could also be a merida in the direction from the husband to the wife. So if the issue is intimacy, so then of course it can go in both directions. The wife can say to the husband, no more intimacy. The husband can say the same thing to the wife. And so therefore, I understand merida in both of those, in both directions. If the correct pshat is like Rav Huna, where we're talking about Tashmish Amita. But if we're talking about malachas, look, the wife has to do malacha for her husband, but there's no malacha per se that the husband has to do for the wife. But the Gemara says, but that's not really much of a question. So in Balmeini Zan Veinim Mefarnes, the Gemara says, look, the husband doesn't have to do malacha per se for the wife, but what the husband has to do is he's got to support her. Mizonos is one of the basic requirements that a husband has to provide for his wife. So if he's declaring that I'm not going to be zanyu, I'm not going to support you, that's merida, that corresponds to her malacha. And so it could very well be that the Mishnah could, we could still defend the opinion of Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, that the merida that we're describing in the Mishnah is malacha. The Amarav Omer and Izamein in front of Yosef Yitink Suva. So the Gemara says, but wait a second. But we know, we're going to see this later in the Masechta, that if the husband declares that I'm refusing to support my wife, so that is immediate grounds for a divorce. And again, remember, there are two basic approaches to how to deal with marital discord. One is, that's it, termination of the marriage, and the other one is slow and steady. Our Mishnah is taking a track of slow and steady. And meanwhile, we know that if the man insists that he's not going to support his wife, so that's immediate grounds for the divorce. So the Gemara says, V'lav lam luche bei baye. So the Gemara says, well, not exactly. Meaning that if a husband refuses to support his wife, so there's going to be first consultation. Meaning, basically, the first approach is going to be our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is going to be the first approach, which is slow down, think about it, and while you're thinking about it, also consider the following. For every week that you refuse to support it, we're going to be adding to the ksuba. So that's the first approach, and then if he's holding on, and he's still insisting that he's not going to support her, so then it's grounds for divorce. So, but meaning that the two statements are not in contradiction to one another. First, we go with our Mishnah, which is just tack on 3 dinarim every week that he refuses to support his wife. And then ultimately, if you see that he's not budging, he's not moving, so then you go to the, okay, this marriage is not going to work out, and then you force him to give a get.
Is he also going to owe the money that he hasn't paid here for support for the past several weeks? In addition to the...
Another good question. I don't know. Good. I don't know. Okay. Meitzvei. All right, so where are we at right now? We have a Mishnah that describes merida. Our Mishnah is taking an approach where either she or he, whoever's responsible for the merida, is going to get penalized, financially penalized, over the course of a weekly either deduction or add-on to the ksuva, depending on whether it's her or him. And we have 2 pshatim in the Gemara in terms of what the definition of merida is. According to Rav Huna, merida is tashmish amita. Either one of them is refusing to engage in Tashmish Amita, and according to Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, it's malacha. Malacha for her, mizonos for him. Okay, meitzvei. Gemara's going to quote a braisa, and once again, we're going to see which of these 2 pshatim really hold up. Who could be subject to merida? Anybody. Now, I don't really mean anybody, but she could be an arusa, she could be a nesua, she could be a nida, she could be a chola, and she can even be a Shemar Yavam. All those people are subject to merida and to the halachas of merida. We're going to skip the parentheses, and you'll see. Later on, maybe if time permits, I'll explain what happened over there with those parentheses. For the time being, we're just going to skip them. And we're on the last line of the Amud. Now, I understand if we're talking about Tashmish, so that's very good. Now, you think to yourself, very good. No, what do you mean very good? One of the women we just described over here is Nida. There cannot be Tashmish between husband and wife when she's a Nida. The Gemara later on is going to ask that question, and the parentheses really belongs later on, where the Gemara is going to ask that question. In the meantime, however, right now we're just going to ignore the issue, not ignore it totally, we're going to come back to it, but the Gemara starts off like this. If we're talking about Tashmish, the Gemara says, "Hanu de Tani Chola." So I totally get it. Meaning, We're talking about the woman's stick, and the woman's really not in the best position to have relations with her husband, but still, her merida, her rebellion is that she's not going to have relations with her husband. And the chiddush of the braisa is still, once she makes that declaration that she's not going to be intimate with her husband, she's not going to be intimate with her husband, so that constitutes the merida. Elamanda ma malacha cholabas malachi. But if we're talking about malacha, meaning if she's a chola, is she really in a position to work? Meaning chola over here, the assumption is not somebody who just has a headache, but somebody who's really, really ill, really infirmed. So the Gemara says she's not in a position where she can work. So why? How do you understand chola being a merida if the definition merida is somebody who has to work? She's just simply not in a position she can work. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to concede. When it comes to Tashmish Amita, that's certainly a definition of Merida, and in fact, it's such a definition, not even open for a discussion or a debate. Meaning, Tashmish Amita, if he or she makes a declaration where they're no longer going to engage in Tashmish Amita, that is a Merida. And that's not even open for discussion or a debate. Ki Pligi, the only debate that exists is Bamalacha. Whether or not Malacha is also considered a Merida. Gemara says that is what's at issue over here. Whether in addition to Tashmish Shemitah, is Malacha also going to be considered a rebellion? Take a look at go back to the Amud Aleph. So we're going to flip just a couple more times. Go back to the Amud Aleph. Tosfos points out that we can take Rav Huna and align him with a previous position of Rav Huna. Remember what Rav Huna said earlier in the Masechta? Tosfos reminds us. Samach Yom Amud Aleph. Tosfos divrei maschal Rav Huna amar mitashmish. Ava mamlacha lo hava meredes. A woman says, I'm not doing malacha for you. So Tosfos says, you know why Rav Huna says that's not considered a rebellion? The Rav Huna l'tami, because Rav Huna taught us earlier in the Masechta, his own opinion is, a woman could say to her husband, look, you keep your support, and I'll keep my income, my earnings. Right? A woman's making a significant amount of money, so she could say to her husband, I'll tell you what, I'm not interested in your support, and I'm interested in keeping my own earnings. So you see that a woman has an option in a marriage to not share her earnings with her husband. When I say share, by the way, I mean give. And not give her earnings to her husband. So Tosfos points out, perfect. Meaning, so Rav Huna over here says that what's Merida? What's the definition of Merida? It has to be Tashmish Shemita, and it's only Tashmish Shemita. Because according to Rav Huna, she can refuse to work and give her earnings over to her husband. So that's within her right. So the only thing left for the definition merida is going to be Tashmish Amita. Okay, very good. So that's Rav Huna l'shita. So that's Rav Huna being consistent with Rav Huna. So says Tosfos. Okay, Gufa. The Hamares Abala Pochasala Miksuvasa. Now we quoted a Braisa on the previous Amud. The Gemara now is going to quote the entirety of the Braisa. Where on Samach Gimel Amud Beis, where the two dots, the Gemara is going to return back to this Braisa. Hamaras Abala Shivri, she rebels against her husband, Pachasan La Miksuva, so Shiva Dinarim B'Shabbos. So a reduction of Miksuva of 7 Dinarim per Shabbos, Rav Yehuda Amar Shiva Tarpiki'in. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's 7 Tarpiki'in, it's a smaller amount. Again, tomorrow we'll talk dollars and cents. Rabbi Sinu Chazar V'Nimnu. Now there was a different approach. The rabbis got together, they counted, meaning they voted, and they agreed to a different approach. And the different approach goes like this. Shul on Shabbos, I make the announcements. I can possibly imagine making one of this kind of announcement. So let's say it's the gabbai that doesn't do it. Let's say it's going to be, I'd venture to say a rav or, you know, one of the leaders of the community would do it. But for 4 weeks in a row, shochen la bezin havayodash afilu ksuvasach me'amana hivsarata. So even if your ksuva is 100 mana, 100 mana obviously is an exorbitant size ksuva. But for 4 weeks in a row, the announcement is made publicly. In other words, she's going to be publicly shamed. And for 4 weeks in a row, it's going to be announced that she's rebelling against her husband. And hopefully that should sound familiar. And it doesn't matter whether she's an Arusa or Nesua, or Nida or Chola or Shomer Yavam. In any one of those cases, you make the announcements, and at the conclusion of those 4 weeks, she forfeits her entire ksuva. Okay, that's
obligation.
Right. So, stay tuned. The Gemara is not going to ask exactly your question. The Gemara is going to ask a similar question, and the answer that the Gemara is going to provide is going to answer your question as well. So, for the first time this morning, Ben, I have an answer for you, but we're just going to ask you to wait a second. Now, obviously, the Rabbeinu mentioned in this Braisa are not in agreement with our Mishnah, meaning that they are fundamentally in dispute with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a slow and steady approach to the rebellious wife. We're basically chip away at Ruxuva until Ruxuva is cut down to nothing. It'll take weeks to get to that point in time. And again, we don't even know how long it's going to take because there could be a Tosefus to the Ksuva as well. But in other words, our Mishnah's approach is slow and steady. The Rabboseinu, their approach is not slow and steady. It's going to take 4 weeks, but at the end of those 4 weeks, that's it. Meaning, at the end of 4 weeks, she will lose her entire Ksuva. So it is really a fundamentally different approach than that of our Mishnah. Okay. Which way does the halacha follow? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss that in the course of today's daf. Okay. Gemara asks a question which I already mentioned on the previous Amud, but now the Gemara spells it out. Rashi also mentioned it on the previous Amud as well. Rashi also told us to be patient. Patience now is going to pay off. The Gemara is bothered. I understand. If we're talking about a rebellion and the rebellion comes in the form of Tashmish Amida, Mita, so what is the Nida saying? I'm not having Tashmish Amida with you. Okay. She's an Nida. She's not allowed to. So how could that possibly be a rebellion? So the answer is second time in 2 days now that we mentioned this idea, bread in the basket. Again, going back to the Rashi that we saw yesterday. So when you're fasting, but you know that there's going to be an end to the fast, and better than that, you know you have food. Okay, so you know there's going to be a conclusion, and you know there's going to be food at the end of the fast. Makes it easier. That's the analogy of pas basalo, bread in the basket. So here too, meaning when a man's wife is Anita, so right now he can't be with her, but he knows that there's going to be a conclusion to that, and he knows that he's going to be with his wife. So right, that pacifies the Yetzirah. That's when she's Anita. If, however, even when she's Anita, she says, you know I'm Anita, and I know we can't have relations now, but we're not going to have relations. So that's it. Meaning at that point in time, there's no longer any pas basalo, and that's considered a rebellion. And Ben, we could say the same thing regarding the Arusa. The Gemara doesn't make the connection, but I think it's a pretty obvious connection. And the same thing is true with the Arusa. Meaning the Arusa, obviously, she and he are not having relations, but what she is saying during the stage of Arusin is, but we're not going to have relations. Meaning she declares that we're not going to have relations. So the so once again now she's removing the bread from the basket. And that's a merida.
But the thing is that they can't really, if you're not getting this, there's no bia, there's not going to be any marriage effectuated.
Well, the only reason why they're not going to be bia is because of her declaration. Remember, the chuppah has to be ru'uya labia. I mean, the only thing that's preventing right now is
that her mom, they're going to be married to this.
She's not, right, okay. No, I'm arguing that there would be a marriage because it has to be ru'uya labia. In other words, as long as there's a potential for bia. Meaning, I understand that.
She won't change her mind.
That and also there's nothing prohibiting the relations. She's making a declaration, but it's not a neder, and she's not a nida, so there's nothing prohibiting the relations. It's obviously there is. It's her word, but I would argue that even the Rambam would somehow view this as a marriage. Either way. Rami Bar Chama says, well, we just talked about him yesterday in the daf, the time and place to make these announcements is in shul and the base medrash, meaning public gathering. And Rava says, you're right. And not only are you right, but you go back to the Braisa, read the Braisa again, And it's clear that's exactly what the Braisa meant. The Braisa says, 4 weeks, four Shabbosos, I should say, Zecher Zeh. The time that we see the most congregation, I mean that literally, the most congregations in Shul and Shabbos. So that's when you make the announcement. Amar Rami Bar Chama Pa'amayim Shochel Lami Beisdin. Achas Kodem Achraz V'achas Acher Achraza. Now, Rami Bar Chama is just very specific over here in terms of, again, we're going over the approach of Rabbi Seinu, not the approach of our Mishnah. The approach of Rabbi Seinu is 4 weeks of announcements. Rami Bar Chama says, in terms of process, due process, so she gets a private visit by Beis Din. Before and after. Before the 4 weeks and after the 4 weeks. Before the 4 weeks, we say the Shluche Beis Din go over there and say to her, look, you're in a state of Merida. Be forewarned, right? In Shul and Shabbos, there's going to be an announcement, and that's going to continue for 4 weeks. And then after the 4 weeks, the Shulchan Beis Din are going to go to her once again. So so there is a private warning that's done to her. Darsh Rav Nachman Rav Chista Alacha Kirabaseinim. Okay, and now who does Alacha follow like? Because basically now there are two very different approaches in terms of how to deal with a woman or a man, for that matter, in a state of merida. So, do you go with the slow and steady approach of our Mishnah, where you deduct from a ksuva 7 dinar in a week, or do you go with the approach of Rabbi Seinu, which is 4 weeks of announcements, and that's it, a full forfeiture of a ksuva? So, Rav Nachman of Chitzta says the halacha falls like Rabbi Seinu of the Tosefta over that of the Mishnah. Now, it is interesting that we're starting with a brice over that of a Mishnah, but if I could just defend this conclusion for a moment, meaning if you look at the Braisa knows about our Mishnah, meaning the Braisa first starts off with the slow and steady approach, and then the Braisa says, Rabbosenu nimnu v'gamru, right, I didn't quote it correctly, Rabbosenu chazru v'nimnu, meaning that there was a revote, meaning that in the Braisa itself, it knew about the slow and steady approach, and for whatever reason, I guess it wasn't working, however they arrived at their conclusion, but in the Braisa itself, they realized that we need a new approach. Amaravai Borchav. So Rabbi says, no, I don't agree. Rabbi says, that's incorrect. The halacha does not follow like Rabbi Seinu. So Amalei Rav Nachman Yitzchak, my Borcha say. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, no, I don't agree with you, Rava. Meaning, it's not wrong. Ana Amrisani Alei, Umishmei Degav Rabba, Amrisani Alei, Oman Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina. I said over that the halacha falls like Rabbi Seinu. I said it over in the name of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina. No, I think that's in fact the halacha like Rabbi Seinu. The iu keman savar ki hadi itmar. So who does he follow? Meaning who does Rabbi follow? Rabbi follows like the following. Rabbi itmar Rabbi Amar Rav Sheshes halacha nimlachin ba. So according to Rav Sheshes, nimlachin, meaning slow and steady, right? The word nimlachin literally means you consult with her. Look at Rashi, nimlachin ba. Mashin is gita, umachzir nala shetachzor ba. Right? You hold the get, and you keep going back to her, that hopefully she'll recant. And you deduct from her ksuva seven dinar in a week. But in other words, not the Rabbosenu approach where 4 weeks and she loses everything, but rather a slow and steady approach with the hope that she'll change. Rav Huna bar Yehuda amar Rav Sheshes halacha einam lachem ba. Now, oddly enough, Rav Huna bar Yehuda quotes the name of Rav Sheshes, the einam lachem ba, that we don't go with this approach of consultation, meaning we don't go with the slow and steady approach of our Mishnah, but rather he quotes in the name of Rav Sheshes that you go with the approach of Rabbi Seinu, which is 4 weeks in the full forfeiture of Viksuva. Okay, there's much more to discuss over here. Tomorrow we're going to pick it up from the words Heichadam Yamaredes. Okay, we're going to be a little bit more specific in terms of how we know that she's a Moretis. It's not just a he said, she said. Beis Din is going to do its due diligence in terms of discovering that she's a Moretis. There's more coming up tomorrow. Again, just a quick recap. So today we saw the very famous story of Rabbi Akiva and how he marries and learns the yeshiva for 24 years and picks up 24,000 Talmidim and finishing up the discussion of a husband leaving his wife to go learn Torah. And then we start with the Mishnah on the Samach Yom HaMaralf with Moredes, a definition of what Moredes is, two different approaches to how to deal with the Moredes, the Mishnah against the Braisa, and a Machlokas amongst the Amorim, exactly who we pass them like. Do we pass them like the Mishnah, or do we pass them like the Braisa?